another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream and you can holler.
Hello, folks. This is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. One man's view of the changing world and the changing economic times. The things that we can all do to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. Well, folks, it's been an eventful weekend. And might not surprise you to hear that, again, we're going to talk a little bit at least half of the show, about the ongoing nonsense with the $700 billion bailout. I had actually decided that I wasn't going to do this. I said last week that, you know, I'm going to come in this Monday and talk about preps and maybe do another show on some sort of gun show, or maybe a little, another thing on archery, maybe get the air gun show done, something like that. But with this thing active right now, with it going on, what I found is I keep every time I do a show about what's going on here, it generates new questions. And as long as my audience is actively saying, well, explain this, explain that, I have, I guess, a duty, so to speak, now that I've got all of you guys willing to listen to me, to answer those questions. And some of these are complex, and they can't really be answered easily in the comments section of the blog at thesurvivalpodcast.com, or even in the forum. The best way to answer them is on the show, because I think it'll be a lot more clear if I do that. So the first question that's come in, and I think I've answered this kind of blended in before, but not as a direct answer. So maybe a talk's gotten glossed over, or the person didn't hear all the shows, or what have you. But it's exactly, where is the $700 billion coming from? Somebody on the show I did Friday, I think it was the one I did Friday, put in the comment section, everybody's talking about what this money will do, where it will go, but no one's talking about where it's coming from. And not like trying to do a leading question either. This is a genuine question. Sure, I know it's going to cost taxpayers, but where does it really come from? Where is it now before it goes into the hands of Secretary Paulson to be divvied up? Great question. And the answer is, right now most of it doesn't exist. They're going to print it. Okay? And by printing it, that means they're borrowing it. The first thing they're going to have to do is they're going to have to get more money from outside the country, from foreign investors into dollars, to be able to make the Ponzi scheme work. So that's why they've already slashed the rates of T-bills. All right, so T-bills are out there selling for a lot less than they were in the past. So that's bringing the Treasury bills, and maybe I'll do a show one day. I'll talk about exactly what a T-bill is, how it works, why it's important to the economy, and how it brings foreign money in. Just understand that right now, that a big portion of the money that comes into this country from foreign investors is in the form of T-bills. Well, with all the headaches the economy's had, a lot of that money's gone out. So they can make up a little bit of the shortfall with that action, but they've already done it. It hasn't really worked. Because what the investors are saying is, you got to show us that this economy's not in as bad a shape as we think it is. You got to do something here. That's the bailout. That's what our government has decided the answer to that is, okay, well, we're going to do this bailout and fix these financial institutions. And the investors are saying, well, you put up or shut up. We're not putting their money in there. They're holding off on putting that capital infusion in there. But the majority of this money, all right, is from the Ponzi scheme that is the Federal Reserve. All they do when they need more money is they fire up the printing presses and they start printing out sheets of 150s and 20s and 5s and 10s and 1s. All right, now they're going to have to print a lot of sheets to come up with $700 billion, but they're going to print it. All right, that's the fundamental flaw in this solution, or even my solution, all these alternative solutions that are out there, is that we're printing money. Well, you say, well, and a lot of younger people especially that haven't, you know, that don't know the lesson of history from the Great Depression and what we used to have with the gold standard, that have been taught this new program, this new situation that we're in today, where there is no gold standard, we simply print money, we control inflation with it, we increase or decrease the money supply at will by the Fed. The Fed all knows what they're doing. They go, well, what's the problem with that? If you need more money, why can't you just print it? And I can't tell you how many young people, especially 20-somethings, lower 20, 22, 23, 24-year-olds, straight out of college, have said to me in one form or another, why can't we just print more money? And the short answer is, because you can't. You can't without a consequence. You have to understand that the money that's out there, all if we took all the money together, the M3 money supply, which is all the money in bank accounts and pockets and in all shapes and forms of American dollars, there's a little over $13 trillion right now, all right? When you talk about printing $700 billion, that's almost a trillion. And that's the other thing, people, you don't understand. This will be $1 trillion minimum by the time it's over with. They keep saying it's going to cost us less. Nothing the government does ever costs us less. All right, so look, it's going to be $1 trillion. 1/13th or 13% increase in the money supply in a year. All right? When that happens, you hold the dollar in front of you right now and look at it. And forget that it's already been eroded as to what it could do since 1965 by like 80%. Forget that. Look at it. Start par today. A dollar is a dollar today. All right? Right now, a dollar buys whatever a dollar buys. And think of something you can go buy for that dollar. When the Fed dumps 13% more money into the supply, your dollar overnight turns into 87 cents. Right? I'm not making that up. Okay? That's how it works. The only way for that not to happen is for the intrinsic value of the country, for our economy to be so strong, for our output to be so strong, so from our production of goods and services to be so strong, that we've risen by 13%. If we rise by 13% in production, output, productivity, and intrinsic value, then we can increase our money supply 13%. The reality is, though, right now, look at the economy. It's not rising by anything. All right? So just that one action of printing that money, 13% value of the dollar gone. So you look at your stock, you know, let's say it props up the stock market, and your stock portfolio only ends up down by 10% this year, and you say, well, I've only lost 10%. It's down year. That's not that bad for a down year. Well, you've also lost another 13% in inflation. All right, that they'll lie to you about, and they'll cook the books on the inflation numbers about, so you didn't, so now you've lost 23%. How do you feel about that? But it's a hidden loss. This is what Ron Paul has been preaching for 20 damn years. He's been telling people, this is the way this works. This is a scam. And now we're hitting a point and a head where this is all gone awry, and people are beginning to see the effect of it. But just by asking the question, where's the money come from, shows that most people still don't understand the fundamental reality. Federal Reserve is not part of the government. It is a private entity, a private group of banks that creates money and lends it to the government. Right now, that rate is 2%. So when they print the $700 billion and give it to the government is immediately saddled with 2% debt back. All right? Just to the Fed. Now, if any of the money has to come in through these T-bills, there's that interest rate on top of it. All right? So we're growing our debt, we're growing our deficit. Our deficit this year was like $407 billion, the highest it's ever, 487, something like that, all right? When you add this to it, this is going to go right on the deficit. We're going to have $1 trillion deficit this year. That means we're short on our bills by $1 trillion this year if we do this thing, and we're going to do it. The next question I've got is, well, Jack, you said that the stock market last week was going to dive on the news that the bailout wasn't here yet. It didn't dive. What gives? Hey, man, one man's opinion, right? That's what I tell you this show is. And I got it wrong there. And looking back now, in hindsight being 2020, I can tell you exactly how I got it wrong. The deal's going to come. I knew the deal was going to come. I promised you the deal would come. Well, you know, that means that the people that play the market every day, the big money people that put money in, pull money out, they know the deal's coming too. And they didn't bite, and they didn't pull their money out. I actually think that the government wanted the market to dive by the 400 or 500 points or more I predicted. Because people would have panicked, and people would have, it would have swayed public opinion overnight. People that already called their congressman and go, I don't want this thing, would have picked the phone and went, oh my God, I was wrong, you got to do it, you got to do it. Right? So they wanted to make it easier for these clowns to vote on this thing with an upvote. All right? And it didn't happen because the people that are watching the market, the people that control the large sums of asset value, no, it's not going to happen. So they're waiting for the spike that's going to come after this thing has been announced, because people are going to pour money back in. The other thing is, a lot of the big money, a lot of the really big independently controlled money, not the mutual fund money, has already come out of the market. It's already been pulled out. So that drop we've already seen, and if you just you want to see that drop, go to finance.google.com, look at the Dow average, and look at it as year-to-date, and you'll see the drop. It's already happened. So part of it was I didn't factor in what had already happened, and the second part was that I thought people would bite on the fact that the deal might not come through. But everybody so believes this deal's going to come, people are waiting for the spike, they're not willing to bail yet. All right. Now, the futures values on the market were down today. This is a little bit of concern. Is this thing really going to come? But it's going to come, and it's going to come today. Just like I said it would come. And they're going to tell us that it's a bipartisan bill, and they worked hard, burning the midnight. Everything I told you in that podcast last Friday, except for the slide in the market value, is going to be proven dead on today, and we're either going to have a vote today or a vote tomorrow. Right now they're saying they've got a deal hammered out. Everybody that matters is on board. Blah, blah, blah. Now here's the reality, folks. We're being bullshitted again. Remember that last election, the people handed the Congress over to the do-nothing Democrats. The Democrats, by and large, are in complete consensus on the way this bill should be written. They're for it. They're for it with all their stuff they loaded into it. All right? Regulation, oversight, golden parachute clauses, all that. Well, they have a majority. They can bring this thing to a vote, and it's being done under congressional martial law, all right? Which means it's an emergency bill. There, no one can throw riders on it, amendments. Once it comes to the floor for a vote, that's it. It has to be voted on within 24 hours the way that it's presented. That's going to come to the floor today, all right? If the Democrats want the bill, they have the votes to pass it. They don't need the Republicans. All this crap about trying to reach across the aisles and bipartisan, they want to sell it to you that way. They don't need the votes. And this is the real man behind the curtain thing you need to understand here. Who most wants this bill? The most liberal of Republicans, the RINOs, Republicans in name only, the Democrats, President Bush. The biggest alliance you see here is between people like Nancy Pelosi and George W. Bush. Polar opposites. Remember Pelosi? I'm going to drain the Republican swamp when I come into power. Nothing's happened, right? If you think the conspiracy, that when you say there's men behind the curtains, conspiracy theory, it's not. Here's your evidence. 2 years of the Democrats controlling Congress, and they've done business as usual. They haven't done one damn thing they said they were going to do. And right now they're making it out like, oh, it's these Republicans are blocking this thing. I mean, they're not blocking anything. All they got to do is, she's a House Speaker. Call it to a vote. Yeah, you know, aye or nay, done, passed, send it off. That's it. They have all the votes they need. They want as many Republicans to go down on this ship with them as they can. This is a political game. Like I said, this bill and 115 pages that it's written on it were already written on Friday. They already knew what it was going to be, and all this crap that went on through the weekend was theatrics. So people like this guy from Houston, I can't think of his name now, his congressman from Houston, that has crazy ideas like letting the market correct itself, letting people that need to suffer, all this other stuff, letting it go. Yeah, like paint him as nuts, because it's going to cost us more. All right. Okay, the next question that I had was, how are we going to decide who gets the money? You know, which banks are going to get the money? Who's going to get bailed out? Well, the answer is that the Secretary Paulson, even with all this new oversight and regulation and other crud and crap, and frankly additional spending that's been laid into this thing now from the Democrats, Secretary Paulson, or his replacement, may God replace him, or Bush, or the next president, will decide who to give the money to, period. Now, there has to be a little rubber stamp now from Congress that will look at it and go, yeah, we can give them the money. But in reality, the Secretary of the Treasury is going to look at assets out there and pick out the ones he wants to buy from whomever he wants to buy them from. And I can't say anything else, because that's it. That's the whole answer to that question. Secretary of the Treasury will decide which bad assets to buy. Period. End of story. Next question is, why can't we just give the money to the people? We're going to print $700 billion? Why don't we just take that $700 billion and give it to the people that are in debt? Well, mostly because the people that are in debt with these houses are idiots. And if you take an idiot who's in financial trouble and you give him money, you make a bigger problem. That's a fundamental reality that neither the Democrats or the Republicans want to admit, but anybody with a libertarian mindset would tell you is fact. And most rich people are actually libertarians. They've created a Democratic-Republican monopoly, all right, that they live outside of with a libertarian philosophy, which is I do whatever I like, right? It's counterfeit libertarianism, is the best way I can put it. They get to do whatever they want. Whenever they have an issue, they just phone somebody up and make it happen. Throw a little bit of money in this guy's hands, that guy's hands, make it happen. And live outside the system, but you don't get to live there with them. You know, they've created an idealistic world for themselves with that philosophy. But they'll tell you, because they know it's true, if I take a guy who is deeply upside down on his home and that hasn't learned his lesson, and most of these people have not, they're still blaming somebody else. Oh, they sold me the loan. They told me I didn't want to refinance in 3 years. I don't understand. No, bullshit. You bought a $450,000 house, and your household income's $80,000. I don't care what kind of loan you got. It was completely irresponsible. If I go into a situation with that guy and say, look, here's what we're going to do. We're going to buy your loan down for you. Here's $150,000. We're going to buy this loan down, and we're going to clean this up for you. We're going to set up a new payment that you can make, and you can stay in your house. Do you know what's going to happen? As soon as the dust settles,
I didn't know,
he's going to go out and start racking his debt back up. So that's one reason we can't give it to the people. The other reason we can't give it to the people, no one wants to talk about this, is it's not enough money to fix the problem. All right? This is freaking economic voodoo. All right, there are trillions of dollars in bad debt. The government's going to go out and buy basically 70% of a trillion. All right, that's going to still leave over $1 trillion of this bad, ugly, nasty paper out there. It's still going to fall. $700 billion would not be enough to go out and clean everything up. All right, so what you do is you clean up the banks that you believe can survive. All right, the ones that you believe you could, this is battlefield first aid that's going on here, all right? They look over at a little shit bank, this bank is upside down $1 billion, they don't have any money, they're totally screwed, their impact on the total economy is minor. Screw them, let them die. You look over at a company like Wachovia, right, and they go, okay, man, these guys are pretty big, we gotta bail them out. That's how these decisions are going to get made. And it's not as malicious as it sounds by the people that are doing it. Because the people that are doing it are stooges. All right? The people that really control the scenes are the Fed. The ones we never see, the men behind the curtain. All right? The congressmen out there, most of them think, oh, my God, I got to do this. We got to do this. Even the Secretary of the Treasury thinks he's got to do this. Even though the Secretary of the Treasury should be tried right now for treason against the United States of America. The Secretary of the Treasury admitted that he knew about this problem. For a very long time. How long? A year. He's publicly admitted that for 1 year he knew this was coming and he did nothing. Okay, that man should be tried for treason against his nation and abuse of his office. He should be impeached. He should at minimum be sent to jail because he's destroyed the lives of countless American citizens to whom his trust was given. This is on par with the Rosenbergs selling secrets about our nuclear programs to the Russians after World War II. All right? This is that is the level of treason we're talking here. You know that the biggest financial crisis since the Great Depression is coming. And for 1 year, you tell no one and you do nothing. And you are the one person that truly has the power to make a difference. And that trust has been given to you by the American people. You've spit in the face of the American people, Secretary Paulson. And you do not deserve to be in office. All right? People talk about impeaching Bush. Hey, man, you want to impeach Bush for something? The hell with the Iraq War. This is something to impeach Bush for. Because he knew, too. All right, all you guys that were talking about peace and Bush over Iraq, totally opposed that. That was nonsense. Right, because the Congress acted together to do the Iraq war, whether they want to admit it or not now. But this is treason. This is high crimes and misdemeanors. This is flushing your country's future down the toilet and knowing that you're doing it, and now coming to the taxpayers like a beggar with your hands extended and saying, please help us. That's what we're dealing with now. Now, folks, I can see I'm not going to go into much preps today because I have a few more questions to answer, and then I'm going to go ahead and wrap this one up so I can separate it out into a completely different show tomorrow, because I'm going to tell you what to do about all this stuff tomorrow. Now, on the alternative plans, there's one circulating around out there that somebody printed and actually cut and pasted into my blog, and I've seen it circulating from a few different sources and chain emails and all. And it basically says if we took $700 billion, and we said there's about 200 million Americans that are over 18 and have jobs, and the other 100 million are kids and dependents, and they don't need the money, and we divided $700 billion by 200 million, we get $495,000, a half a million dollars for every working American. Send them the money, and the problem will go away because Americans will become wealthy overnight. Okay, there's a lot of things wrong with that, but I'm going to kill this one for you really hard because it sounds good and it's starting to get some traction out there in these chain emails, right? First problem is the math. $700 billion divided by 200 million, it's not $495,000, it's $495. Say that again. $700 billion divided by 200 million is $495. So we don't get $495,000. We all get $495. Basically, that would be rehashing the stimulus package we did earlier this year. And if you think about it, some people got $1,200 for a family, right? And the total cost of that, I think, was like $350 billion. Right, so that tells you right there that, you know, even if it was an equal appropriation of the distribution here, the way this thing's being presented, that maybe $700 million could be $2,000, right? But it can't be $495,000, half a million dollars, right? Just mathematically doesn't work. The other side of that is if we just took the money, the $700 million, and stuck it into the economy and gave it to people, again, we go back to the, you know, why can't we give the money to the people? Well, number one, it doesn't work. Because the idiot you give it to will continue to behave like an idiot because he has to learn his lesson. Because if you bail people out, you get into situations they created for themselves, they don't learn. You bail people out who got into situations they did not create for themselves. All right, the guy with an $85,000 household income that bought the $120,000 home that lost his job. If you're going to bail somebody out, bail him out. That's responsible spending. If you have an $85,000 income and a $400,000 house, you are not responsible. All right? Unless you've bought, sold. You have a $400,000 house with a $100,000 mortgage and an $85,000 income, I think you're in good shape. And I think you've behaved responsibly and you've figured out how to compound interest in your favor instead of against you. So I don't have a problem with you owning a $4, $5, or even $1 million house with $80,000 worth of income if you can figure out how to afford it. If you take years to do it, and you appreciate income in one home and transfer it to another and do what everybody was doing, and you do it with responsible mortgages where you're never carrying too much debt that you can't cover it yourself. But the problem is even the guy that's with a $100,000 mortgage and an $80,000 income, when he loses his job, now he has no income, he can't pay. You want to bail somebody out, bail him out. Because he probably lost his job because of these jackasses with these upside-down mortgages and these fancy subprime bullshit. But that's not what's going to get bailed out of this thing. The bad loans are going to get bailed out. And Joe and John Taxpayer are going to get raked in the butt again, and they're going to lose their little houses. They're going to lose their responsible houses when they lose their job because the recession's coming. So I just want you, that formula won't work, the math's not there, and putting the money into the economy won't work anyway. We ought to try it. We sent people between $300 and $1,200. People blew it like they were told to blow it. Go spend it. Stimulate the economy. The economy fell flat on its ass. We had a little peak in the stock market right there around June, and then reality set in, and it went away. Now, the next thing that I keep seeing people talk about, you guys, You're falling into the rabbit hole. This damn CEO thing. Unless you're going to let go of this. I've told you this since Tuesday of last week. Everybody agreed. No golden parachutes. No big bonuses. No jets for the CEOs on their way out. They're not going to buy a Maserati and a Learjet on their way out, take the money to bail their company out, and walk away with a couple million dollars or a couple tens of million dollars. It's not going to happen. never was going to happen, never was going to see the light of day. All right? It is a misdirection. What they realize is that 70 to 80% of Americans are extremely opposed to this bailout. They're giving you something to be more opposed to. All right? Giving you something to be more opposed to. Look at these CEOs. We're not letting them get off scot-free. They're not going to get off rich and wealthy and full of money, and they're not going to get all, you know, right? Folks, these people are freaking rich already. They have tens of millions of dollars already. They have the best accountants and financial advisors on the planet. They've already gone into hedge positions because they had more knowledge that this market was going to fall than anybody else. They've already made tens of millions of dollars on the fall. They're already positioned to make tens of millions of dollars on the recovery. All right? They can move that position in an instant if they know the bailout's not going to come. They're already rich, and they're going to stay rich, and there's absolutely nothing that we can do about it. Okay? Period. They already have their money. The $700 billion is not for them. The illusion is the money's for the banks. The money is for the government! Do you guys not get this, right? You're supposed to be the most enlightened people on the planet here listening to me, all right? The government is getting this money. How, you might ask? Well, they take the money from us, the taxpayer, by printing it at our expense, okay? They then put it onto the ledger as debt, which must be repaid by the taxpayers. We're going to pay for this whether we like it or not. They go out and they buy about $2 trillion in value for $700 billion, all right? There's huge profit to be made here, okay? The trillions of dollars now come into the government a few years from now, because the economy is not going to tank. This is not 1929. I keep telling you that. Not yet. That's after we do this game a couple more times. That's 10 years from now. That's maybe 15 years from now, the 1929 crash. This is the 1975 crash, all right? So, they pull all of these, okay, I told you, when people own your mortgage, they own your house more than you do. They're taking, they're seizing the assets of the American people with their own money. They're going to turn a huge profit with it, and they're not going to send you and me a tax rebate. They're going to use it to pay for stuff, all right, to pay down the debt. It doesn't matter what funnel they make the money look like it goes into. Let's say they say, okay, you know what? We made $2 trillion off of this. It only cost us $700 billion. That's $1.3 trillion. We've taken care of you, Mr. and Mrs. Taxpayer. We're going to pay $1.3 trillion straight down on the debt. Right? You say, well, how? How could that be bad? Oh, how could it be bad? Oh, because, what does that mean? Well, that means that $1.3 trillion they paid on the debt doesn't need to come out of the general fund. This is the lottery illusion game. Oh, we put the money in education. Right? They put the money in education, and then they siphon the money that would have went to education anyway for other crap. That's how this is going to work. The government's going to get an extra $1 trillion to build social bullshit programs that you don't want at your expense, increasing your debt when they do it. That's what's going to happen. Done. End of story. Reality has set in for you now, I hope. This is money for the government from you. This is not money for the CEOs. This is not money for the financial institutions. This is not money for the banks. All the banks are doing is taking a bad asset and selling it to the government at a junk market rate. They're divesting themselves of debt. All right? They are not getting enough money to go out and party. It does not put them into the black. It simply takes the pressure off them from these bad loans so they can go back to what? Making monopoly money. Continuing to lend money. The scary thing the president said is, banks stop lending. Debt stop growing. Oh my God, this is awful. Alright? So, the banks go back to creating more debt. The American consumer goes back to buying what he can't afford. And the government seizes trillions of dollars of the American people's money through a giant mortgage grab by buying the stuff as discount paper when they know that the worst of the worst is already gone. Alright? Think about this. Why did Paulson let this go for a year? He let it go for a year because if they did this a year ago, they would have bought all the stuff that already foreclosed and defaulted. All right? Now they're buying the stuff that survived until this point. See, they're not going to go in and buy the foreclosed property. No, no, no. They're going to buy the stuff that's on the verge of foreclosure, that's on the edge of foreclosure, or looks like it may go into foreclosure. Here's what they're going to buy. They're going to buy Joe Blow's mortgage. And Joe Blow has a $400,000 mortgage on a house that's now worth $350,000 because the market corrected itself. Joe Blow has a 2% interest rate. But in, let's say, April of next year, his 2% is going to go to 7.9%. Joe won't be able to pay. But if the federal government holds his mortgage, he'll just say, Joe, what can you pay? 3%? That's 1% over what you were already paying. That's not that much. Now I got a 1% return as the government. It doesn't cost me anything because it's your money and I printed it in the basement. All right? You're paying 2%. Because you're the taxpayer, you're holding the bill. I'm the Congress, I'm not holding the bill. I'm passing your money to it, I'm making a 1% return, and I'm sitting on a mortgage, and I'm waiting for it to appreciate in value. And when you finally sell your home, some of the profit, because the market returns, will come to me. And I'll take that money and I'll put it into our lockbox for the taxpayers to dedicate it to paying off debt. And eventually we'll make a big giant pile of trillions of dollars worth of money out of this little scheme. And we'll pay off debt. And we'll say, look what we did. And everybody will party and everybody will be happy. And they'll say, look, they did it. And they'll take those trillions of dollars of general funds that were pledged to pay down the debt. And they'll use it for universal health care, national identification cards, and RFID chips in them to track our movements. They are going to hold us down on the ground like a kid on the playground, grab our hand, and punch us in the face with our own hand. That's what this thing is. That's the end game here. And I'm going to go ahead and wrap this one up today because I think I've depressed you enough. But I want you to know what you're being lied to about here. I want you to understand this, all right? And in the end, they get the money, we get the debt. That's the reality here. And it's time for you now to, again, if you haven't done so, call your congressman, call your senator, and say you are vehemently opposed to this thing, if you are. If after you've listened to me, you've decided I'm nuts or I'm crazy or you don't care, you still think we need to do it, and you think we should do it, call them and tell them we should do it, right? This is not a show where I try to direct the way you think or your actions, all right? But call them and go on record. So when all the dust settles out of this thing, you know, you could feel better about whatever happens because you had a say in it. Because voting in November is not going to do anything for what this is going to do. Call them and let them know. Call both senators. Call your congressman. I've provided links before. I'll provide them again. So I'll finish up with, well, what do the banks get? The banks do get their bad debt taken away. And what we're going to see is these thousands of banks are going to be consolidated into a couple hundred. And the other thing that we're going to see is the biggest banks that we already have are going to become even bigger. I told you guys to watch Wachovia. The Wachovia was on my death list. Now Wachovia is looked at as being bought out, and one of the people buying them out is Citigroup. All right. Now, if you're an astute listener, you may say, Jack, wait a minute, did you screw up again? Because you mentioned Citigroup a couple times now. You said Citigroup's in trouble. Well, Citigroup's in trouble. How are they going to buy Wachovia? Well, Citigroup doesn't look like they're in trouble yet. The problem that Citigroup has is that they have massive amounts of their money, not only in the subprime mess, but they have massive amounts of their money into the credit card toxic consumer debt market, billions of dollars sitting there that people owe on crap they bought 5 years ago. And the first thing people generally default on is credit cards. So they are long-term looking at a lot of bad debt. Now, remember, this bill has already been expanded to buy things other than mortgages, including some of this bad consumer debt, all right? Groups like Citibank are maneuvering right now to step up and buy out crap like Wachovia so that when the money gets doled out, when the $700 billion gets spent, they can be big enough to be too much of a risk to let fail. So that they'll be first in line to get the money. That's why all this stuff's going on right now. And you watch. You watch Citigroup, and I don't remember who the other bidder is. Whichever one of these guys wins, you watch when the money gets handed out. You watch them step to the front of the line and go, hey, we helped out. We prevented Wachovia from failing. Where's our money? All right? Watch Bank of America do it. Hey, we bought Merrill Lynch. We need Countrywide way before this thing happened. We've been helping out here. We're huge. You need to help us first. You watch the biggest banks get the most money. All right, so it's not that the failed bank CEOs and executives are going to become rich off of this. It's that the successful banks are going to become rich off this. So all while you're out there angry with, rightfully so, right, the people that screwed up their companies, right, and worried they're going to get rich, like I said, one, they're already rich, and the people that are going to get richer are the United States Treasury and the presidents and executives of the banks that have survived. They're the two places that the windfall is going to come. Because the government gets the bad mortgage, it's going to recoup its investment that it can afford to wait for, because it buys it with money that doesn't exist. All right? They get that, and the big banks get to go in and buy the little banks up for pennies on the dollar, because they've been decimated by the government seizure of assets. All right? And when one of the little banks doesn't play along, like WaMu did, and WaMu kept fighting and saying, no, 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 no! We're okay. We're okay. We're going to be all right. The government said, no, you're not. Grabbed them, seized them, and sold them against their will to J.P. Morgan, who just happens to be the most powerful bank within the Federal Reserve System. What shocking, right? So, folks, I hope this has answered more questions that you've had. If it gives you more questions, ask them. Just know I'm going to go away from this topic tomorrow. I might mention the fact that I was right and the bill got passed today or is going to be voted on tomorrow. I might mention that I was right about the sweaty, gray-haired congressman, whichever one it's going to be, that's going to come out and make the announcement, right? But I'm going to talk tomorrow about just a fundamental concept of this show. How do you live your life with the mentality that you're going to have a better life if times get tougher, even if they don't? So that none of this crap really matters. So that you look at it the way I do. To me, this is all an academic exercise. I don't care, all right, in my personal life, what these idiots do, because I'm going to be okay. I care what they do because they're taking away my country. They're taking away my freedom. They're creating all this monopoly money so they can use it to fund programs that further that agenda. I care because you, my fellow Americans, are being hurt. But in the fundamental reality, is it going to affect me? Am I going to lose my home? Right? Am I going to be on the streets? Am I going to the soup kitchen? No. And it's because I've come up with this philosophy of living the best life you can now and preparing for that life to continue under any circumstances that occur. So tomorrow, that's what I'm really going to talk about. How do you tune your mind that way? What steps can you take that way? How do you prevent yourself from falling into the trap of debt? I'm going to go over the debt snowball again, and we're going to talk about that. And then Wednesday, I'm going to move into something that's hardcore fundamental preparations that you can do. You know, what to do, how to do it, where to put your money, where to put your food, how to find property, something like that. I'm going to try to do the rest of the week on that because we beat this up enough. So if there's questions, send them in. Just know that I'm not going to do a whole show again like this. You send me a question, I'm going to throw you the bullet point quick answer. I think I've answered about everything that I have the ability to answer now. I don't think I know enough to answer anything else, so if you haven't heard an answer yet, go back and listen to the other shows on this, and by the time you listen to all of them, you should have the answer that you're looking for. Other than that, folks, remember, continue to comment on the blog, tell me what you think, ask me questions, send me show suggestions. Again, you can email me at jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com. You can go by the website at thesurvivalpodcast.com. We have our new forum up. It's at thesurvivalpodcast.com/forum. It's not branded or dressed up yet, but it's very active. There's well over 100 members. There's well over 1,000 posts already. Go in and contribute. Meet some folks, and I'm looking to improve the forum. I've got a good staff of moderators. Some of you that have asked to be a moderator, I'm still looking at where and how I could use you. Mainly the reason I'm not using the people that volunteered yet is because you said I haven't done it before. So I need to put together a little video on how to do all the functions so you'll know what to do. And I just haven't gotten around to that yet. When I do, I'll turn you guys on as moderators in the sections you've requested. The other thing is make sure you join our listener appreciation contest. Our listener base is growing like crazy. It's growing like crazy now. I'm seeing people come to the site now from all kinds of sources out there. If you'll help me out, you'll either win a free iPod or $150 worth of silver if you're the person drawn when we reach that 1,000 listener goal on the Feedburner stats. Remember, that's only a portion of our listeners, so we're already reaching more than 1,000 people out there today, and it's because of people like you. And again, tune in tomorrow. We'll go into some more practical stuff. Again, this has been Jack Spirico with the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
You can scream and you can holler. It really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.